And welcome to the Dice of Screaming podcast.
Really? Yeah, that's the winter bird of Michigan. That's the winter dice scream.
Yeah.
Because everybody's got it. Like the creeping crunch.
Yeah, everybody got it or had it. So.
Yeah, it's certainly not as bad as like that, you know, crap fest a few years ago where, man, having that was no peach. That sucked. But. This isn't exactly a party, but it's entirely survivable.
Yeah, so we're back, more or less, and fit and fine fettle. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed,
maybe. I've never felt fettler.
What is fettler?
I've never found out what fine fettle is. I gotta look that one up. There's an Englishism that I'm sure there's a backstory there.
Well, you know, you got Google, so. All right, yeah, but hey, I'm Randy.
I'm Mike.
And we're here to talk about stuff and gaming and things, and so we're gonna drag you along a rambling discourse, but today's topic is going to be a review of Taming of Brimstone. And boy, we've really prepared
as promised
we've really got a good one here. I'm cracking my knuckles over it because we're putting some prep work into this, and anytime we do prep work, which is all of 10 minutes, it always pays off.
Yes, we did both of the minutes of homework.
Yes,
yeah, actually, let's be perfectly candid. This is actually a topic on which we have genuine familiarity. It required a little less work because we both have played through Taming of Brimstone, albeit many years ago, and have, of course, done exactly what we tell other people to do, which is to harvest it for ideas. It has been inspirational to us for... like, well, I guess now it would be almost 40 years.
Really? Yeah.
You know, like 36 or 37 years?
83.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, then it is. It is like 40 years. So this is why we're sharing it. And we did not need a lot of prep work on this.
No, we didn't.
We're in our comfort zone. Like now, for some of the more complicated topics, you know, like we've actually had to sit down and like both go home and like, okay, let's study the paperwork. You know, take time out, but not for this one.
So. No. So.
But it's Boot Hill. We're already in our happy place.
Yeah, Boot Hill, and this translates to games such as, well, what I've run it for is Deadlands. I just basically shaved off all the Boot Hill stuff and just ran with it as Deadlands. Put a little weird West twist on a couple monsters here and there. I think I had the blood ticks and the tumbleweed monster.
Oh, man.
A little tumbleweed that just runs out of nowhere and attacks you. Clings around your legs and starts draining blood out of you.
Tumble along with the tumbling tumbleweed. They're tumbling!
Yeah, take that. So, with that, let's roll for what is in store for our future. So we bring the Ouster Gallimancer Force to divine from the sacred UC.
All right. The Astral Gallimancer is staring at next week and peers through the mists and divines that we're having a look at the arms race of monsters in fantasy gaming.
D&D specifically, but we'll be talking about some other.
There is an almost mythical archetype here of like the sun chasing the moon chasing the sun. You know, it is one of those facets of our nature as gamers, all of us. And in every system, the increasing nature of trying to present new challenges that are unexpected and hairy that are going to give players a thrill and make them work for it. And then the players eventually become familiar with the challenges that have been placed before them, and the process of creation and destruction begins anew. So this, like,
wow.
Yeah, this is like we're into the Heart of Darkness stuff here, okay? The core of what it means to be a creative in.
Well, I was just going to invoke some RuneQuest monsters off of this, but I feel in good company now because you invoke this about what is at the heart of Glorantha RuneQuest is. You know, where I think that, like, why RuneQuest is the high end of fantasy gaming.
And there's a reason we're this passionate about
And, where D&D is like, okay, yeah, it's the McDonald's. I'm not trying to say anything bad about it.
No.
But, like, you know.
Approachable.
Yeah, it's approachable. It's good. You know what you're getting into. Some people like it, some people don't, you know, and there's all kinds of tastes that can be put on it. But I like it. So yeah, I feel pretty good about that. I also just want to mention that with that topic, we'll be talking about not only the retro monsters, but some of the new monsters. So it's just not going to be an old fuddy-duddy fest of crazy monsters that were assigned to the marginalia of... Did I do that right? Yes, I think.
Yeah, marginalia. Yeah.
Of the old school AD&D books like The Squealer or Wolf of Sheep's Clothing or Dire Corby's.
The old 2E and Fiend Folio stuff. But this process has continued and has like shown its persistence in every single edition throughout the years. It makes it clear
that
this
is a facet
of gaming itself.
Dungeon Crawl Classics. I wanted to, we'll bring that in. So, okay. So, yeah, great topic. We'll save it. So,
it's
us. Got to stop talking about it because we'll get it carried away.
Yeah, let's not.
So, let's talk about what's going on in the gaming community. We haven't had a roundup in a while because me and Mike have not really been able to catch up, but we had some time to sit down today. And
which I did want to say, news pursuant to last week's podcast, my brother is recovering very nicely.
Good.
I had mentioned that he was involved in a head-on collision. It was very bad. It was an extremely bad collision. I cannot stress that enough. However, things are rapidly progressing for the better. And literally, my entire family is breathing a giant sigh of relief. Because the hairy part where we weren't sure how things were going to turn out, it has passed. And the projected curve of recovery is just going so much better than we anticipated. So cause for happiness. A lot of relief in the hacienda of the Hannas. So,
well, good.
I'm in a good place.
Well, we hope, we all wish, Chris.
That's right, buddy.
And the best to you. You know, once again, learning how to walk.
Well, yeah, managed 300 steps.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, with assistance. I mean, they've obviously got the PTs and
the
walker.
You know, you've done well in life when you've mastered having to master walking more than once in your life. You've lived a long life at that point.
Yeah, you and Chris are in that club now. Both of you. I mean, you in a naval hospital and him at like a you know, rehabilitative physical therapy facility.
Yeah, and after knee surgery.
That is not a peach.
I'm gonna relearn. I did it once, and you think that would be all you were required, but you know, being a red rest and off your feet for a long enough. All right, so hey, last week's podcast went out pretty well, and Mike, you had a chance to listen to some of our older podcasts that we did in your absence. And again, thanks to Pat and Scott Bonney for coming in, Pat Galligan and Scott.
Now, Mr. Bonney already knows we love him. Mr. Galligan, bless you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that
was so good to
getting a lot of praise off of that. So yeah, we'll probably be doing another one if I need to pull you in. That was awful.
Happen again. The Christmas schedule at work gets very crazy. I'm told, I have been pre-warned that we will be moving to night shift once again, but there's only going to be one immediate lateral sharp like pull of the reins, and then we're going to stick at that schedule for a lengthy period of time. They're not going to do what they did to me a year ago, which was to continually rotate shifts by a few hours. You're like, okay, this week we're trying it like this. This week we're trying it like this. I do not adapt well to like, wait, I got to change my sleep schedule every week. No, they're just going to jerk this short and sharp once. And then I will be on night shift and I will find a way.
We will make time.
I will make this happen.
All right. So
make it legal. We'll
make it happen. So let's get on with it. What news from around the realms?
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about 5th edition. And the 5th edition Humble Bundle is out. And hot on the heels.
Pathfinder.
Well, 5th edition for D&D.
Oh, sorry.
But I have another thing. If you want to talk about getting some Dungeons & Dragons content, there's a Kickstarter out right now from EN World, The Vault of Splintered Souls, and this brings us back to a very nice place I like to be in fantasy gaming, which is the Mega Dungeon. And this is the Vault of Splintered Souls. It's just been released. It's a Mega Dungeon with 14 layers in the ruins below Mal Takar. discover the Soul Library, despair at the Weeping Halls, and attend the Faceless Feast. It's for characters 6th level, and will take you all the way up to 10th.
And it's wonderful to see. Typically, you see the releases for D&D 5th edition that are official products of Wizards. You see things that are campaign level events that start at level 1 and work their way to level 10 or higher. And here you see something that is like right from the outset for higher level characters. Like you should begin as mid-level characters and then work your way to the higher levels. I like that. Okay, that's a change of pace to me. Now.
Yeah, that is a Kickstarter that's out. It's non-Wizards of the Coast, so it's helping out the community. As I believe that, while 5e has some hate garnered by some of the actions of Wizards of the Coast lately, and I think that's well-deserved by Wizards of the Coast, shame on them, that the game is not only viable, but there's a huge community of people who just love to play it, and you want new content, but you don't know what to do or where to go to turn to get it. Here you go. This is EN World's Kickstarter. It looks like it'll be it's a 100-page softcover book, so it's not too expensive. It's not going to break the bank, and it's definitely going to be something. EN World is no fly-by-night organization with dubious qualities to it.
Exactly, and that is why we have chosen to mention this one, because they are a known quantity.
They promise this will be delivered by sometime in January, mid-January is the ship date.
And they've got a very solid track record, so even if there were to be some delay, it will be of inconsequential nature and will not genuinely impact whether people are getting what they were promised.
It's a mega dungeon, so, you know.
It's a mega dungeon, okay? I mean, if you want a lot of playtime,
you have to start at 6th level, so get your characters worked up to 6th level and then take this on.
The sound of that. First, that Library of Souls thing. I don't know what that is, but it sounds awesome. They really had me at that. You had me at hello. but congratulations.
Yeah, Vault of Splintered Souls, look for it. Look for it by name. No, go to the Kickstarter. Look it up, or just go to Yen World site. They have nice links there. I might link it in ours just so you can take a look at it. But yeah, the whole idea of the despair at the Weeping Halls.
The Swamp of Sorrows.
Yeah.
Artax.
The Faceless Beast and the Soul Laboratory. I'm down for some soul.
Yeah, I mean, does the Soul Laboratory analyze and explain James Brown's awesomeness?
Mm. You know what? We'll have to find out. All right. So, yeah, also released from Wizards of the Coast, Deck of Many Things. This has had a little bit of a curious past. But, yeah, it's out. So, grab yourself a copy. I know I am going to, just so I have a Deck of Many Things to throw up players, like, just throw it out there. Here, touch it. You're going to have to draw. I don't want to. You do it. I'm not asking. I'm telling. I don't like this D&D game. Your participation was not asked for. It is mandatory.
Yeah. The Deck of Many Things and its colorful history, which, again, this is a classic that returns in every edition since the first. And the reason for that being that the greatest weapon in a Dungeon Master's arsenal is not the monsters that we will be discussing, the Monsters Arms Race, next week. That's still not the greatest threat in D&D. The most powerful foe that any DM can throw at players is their own actions. So the Deck of Many Things has a hallowed place in the hearts of D&D players, and everyone who has ever introed into the game and played that for the first time, oh man, just the chaos that ensues becomes a part of their memory of the game. And it was true with every single group I have ever played with, or DM'd. It doesn't matter how you experience a Deck of Many Things as a DM or a player, it's always legendary, bad or ill, or good or ill. It's fabulous. We love it.
For wheel or woe. And then, if you haven't heard...
Third news.
Pathfinder Core and GM Core are now out and available. So if you want to see what's cooking, go right out and get them, get yours ordered. We would definitely maintain, go to your local game store, no matter where it is. Grab yourself some copies that you support. Paizo, even if you're not going to play right now, I'm not going to be playing. I'm making the full adjustments. I mean, we're going to be using some stuff like I've already said. You can already start using the classes, which are available in Archives of Nethys, and the new runes for the shields, which I think was an undersight on a missed opportunity, more appropriately, for the first printing of the rules. But it's nice to see that they're going back and changing that. And also, yeah the people talking about, oh, Pathfinder's more lethal now. No, it was a misprint. I do have to agree that it was a quality assurance question that I have about that. That one slipped through, but it caused a lot of fuss and feathers up in the air.
Oh, my.
Be just, oh, it's even more lethal than it was before. No, it plays the same.
So. Now, what was the precise misprint?
They were referring to an older printing of the wounded condition. See, when you die, when you go to zero hit points, you go to unconscious and attain a condition known as dying. Oh, okay. This sounds very complicated. Well, yeah, it's pretty straightforward. It's you get the dying condition. Now, so your friends aid you. When you go to dying four, your condition worsens every round unless you stabilize or you are treated by your companions. You with me so far?
Yeah.
All right. So when you get to dying four, you're dead. Bye. Okay, it's a raised dead resurrection time. Now, if at any time your companions intervene and obviously aid you, or you know, fumble the roll and send you deeper than
that. I rolled a stabilize one. Thanks a lot. You just like impromptu splenectomy by my own teammate. Ugh.
You know, it's the Michael Scott office moment when Stanley has a heart attack. Yeah, okay. You're not helping. That's rolling a one. You know what I'm talking about. Now, once you get out of that, you gain a condition called wounded. And your wounded value, when if you were to gain the dying condition again, it increases by your wounded value.
Oh.
So if you have wounded one, you're not dying one, you're dying two. So you're that much closer to death's door.
So they bring you back again, and you wind up wounded two. If you're lowered to zero again, this time you start off at three. So there's only a limited time you can pull off.
Yeah, there's only so many times you can be at zero hit points and be back in the fight. Now, there's a lot of ways around it. We're not going to get into all the marginal lean on it. It's not important. But what had happened was that they misprinted it and said that your wounded condition applies to your stabilized checks and that your dying condition automatically increases by an extra point because, you know, your wounded value will increase. And it's, okay. It was a badly printed explanation because they tried to be very thorough and exact, and it ended up getting very badly translated because they used the wrong text. They went back to the old text, which was caused some confusion initially. I think it was in the first or second printings. Nonetheless, Paizo has already issued the errata.
So
make sure you get the errata. And look at that before your players completely fly off the handle. Like, oh my gosh, it's so much. Yeah, Pathfinder, I will say this, Pathfinder 2nd Edition has a pucker factor. Every combat can go sideways.
And I approve of that. Because, look, one of the largest complaints from older gamers regarding 5e is, you know, slightly unfairly, but with some justification, is that it's the kiddie pool. Okay, like they're just very low risk. Look, there are ways to play that are more serious, that apply tougher rules, and that put tougher standards in place to make gameplay more complex and more risky. The possibility of character death can be increased if you're willing to work with the systems to do that. However, you know, like out of the box, it is, frankly, a less fatal system and allows for greater narrative-driven play. Like, yeah, you're still gaming, you're still rolling dice, you're still facing challenges and all of that, but the odds of permanent character death go down. So having to restart the campaign with a new batch of characters every couple of months isn't as much of an issue as it was in our day. I kind of stand in the middle on this. I do appreciate, respect, and have fondness for higher risk systems where like player character termination is plausible. Like this
Operation TPK is a go.
The dragonfly has left the branch. I repeat, the dragonfly has left the branch. Yeah, it's... I'm sorry, but it enhances my engagement in play to have that risk in place. That, like, I like this character. I don't want to lose them. But I got to place them in risk.
And with Pathfinder, so, what we're specifically talking about is not necessarily how the dying condition is essential here. But in D&D, Pathfinder, the critical hit system isn't just a 20.
Yeah.
It's anything 10 over your armor class. So if you have an armor class of 14 and somebody rolls a total of 24,
you've been critted.
You've been critted. And that's where the poker factor comes in. And that, and the way the system unveils itself, it's pretty clever. Like this, that range is always there for the rest of your adventuring career. Every time you play sit down and play Pathfinder, whether you're first level or 20th level, you're going to have, like, oh my gosh, if it rolls 10 over my armor class, I'm going to be taking some serious damage. And some of that damage at high levels can be incredible. Like, what do you mean I just took 400 points of damage? Did I stutter? No, I did not. You took 480 points of damage. I only have 320 hit points. Yeah, you're... Okay, let's roll for the dying condition. And here we are. So, nonetheless, we got all that going on. That said, I think the remaster has, we've talked about it, but it's nice to see it's finally out now. So both you have the time to digest the player core and GM core before we get into the full throated approach of it. So anyway, those are that's the news. We have one other thing to mention. One of the things we didn't talk about before was one of my players at Monday Night asked about if Critical Role is still around.
Oh my gosh, are they ever?
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to talk about this back in the tail end of October. Critical Role's filled up Wembley Arena now. Mike, of course.
This is where the... Look, man, Sex Pistols have played Wembley, okay?
A lot of people have.
But this is not a small, insignificant venue. This is not like, oh, well, they built the, like, you know, Boise, Idaho
Junior High State Theater. Auditorium.
It could fit 500. No. 12,500 seats.
Plus standing room, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
outrageous.
I love the one of the reviews that said it looked like a K-pop concert with everybody just wildly on their feet screaming and chanting out.
Yeah, I hate that it's compared to K-pop, but...
Well, people like it. But they had a reunion. They were there to play a specific reprisal of the Mighty Nine that had that campaign had went off into retirement, but they reprised their roles and had a new scenario to play out.
As I understand it, Mighty Nine is in production for the animated version.
Yep. And they're going to do that. And now that's one thing we need to put out together is basically if you took all the hours, I think it's, they've been doing it for 8 years now. So that's, 1,300 hours of content.
Yeah. 8 years. What's most impressive is that it has only taken 8 years to go from like their beginnings to where things are at now. That's actually an astonishingly fast pace. For a gaming-related, niche, hobby-driven entertainment medium to wind up playing a place like Wembley, that's stunning. It's a capital achievement. They deserve it.
Deservedly
praised for what they have accomplished.
Yeah, I wanted to talk that over with you because I mentioned it. Yeah, they're back and they're still here. But more importantly, they've been taking a little bit more breaks and running this campaign a little looser because they took a break for their Candela Obscura, I believe I got that right, side campaign. Basically, they're kind of Call of Cthulhu-esque homage. I want to call it an homage, but it's its own campaign. It's basically like if you had to redesign a world for it to play Call of Cthulhu in that didn't contain all the crazy stuff from our background and history and just create your own kind of stabilized world. This is the one that they decided to do it. I'll have to say that I'm not a big fan of that system, but I like it because it is a storytelling vehicle that has more... It has more structure to it than, say, some freeform storytelling games I've seen in the past. Nothing against anybody who enjoys it. It's just not my cup of tea, okay? But I like the fact that that is a form of gaming that is being explored and supported by them, and I don't have any complaints.
Yeah, look, if people enjoy the story, the narrative-driven events, if that's what people are looking for, then, like, by all means, go out there and provide them with stuff to do with that. That's great. I always wind up being, Jack Sparrow, but where did the dice go? I don't understand. There was a whole bunch of dice.
Well, yeah, there's still a lot of...
And now we don't have any dice. You rolled all the dice. That's what happened to it.
They still have a lot of dice rolling, but it's a lot more... When you're watching Critical Role, I think that you're watching a story so unfold. And so it's a little bit more easy for me to enjoy it than it is to be a participant in it. And I think that's just where I want to stake that in.
Yeah. It's not necessarily my preferred method of gameplay. A little more organic here, but that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, hey.
Love them anyway, man. It's a big... This is a big niche, as niches go, and it didn't used to be, but it has become a very large niche, for which I'm incredibly grateful.
Mm-hmm. So I think that pretty much sums up our round robin look at the last few weeks that we haven't had a chance to sit down and really discuss some stuff. So we catch back up.
News of the gaming world
and our thoughts on it. There you go, shuffling papers.
Yes. all the news that's fit.
I'm Punch McGroin, and these are the news.
These are the newses.
All right. So I guess we'll wrap it up here and move on. But anyway, we'll be right back with Tim
and Brimstone. I'm Chuck Dingleberry.
What's the weather? All right. We'll catch you folks in just a few. Stick around. And welcome back. So we are here.
Welcome to the Taming of Brimstone.
Finally arrived. And
freshly imported from 1983.
Yeah, March 1983. As we said, this was from Dragon Magazine number 71. So you have to go way back in the machine. Fortunately, it's in the public domain, so you can get yourself a little copy there in the Ann Archive. Just type in that old Google. I don't know about Bing. I don't mess around with that Bing. But
maybe not Google. Oh, man.
But yeah, just type in Dragon Magazine number 71 or Taming of Brimstone, one of the two. They'll come up.
Yeah, the documents are out there and they are free. Anybody can acquire this, which, like, the ease of access is another thing that we approve of when it comes to harvesting older material, because this is also extremely cost effective. And inspirational, because not only do you get a window into, some classic material of yesteryear, but you also get the added bonus of a low-cost means to augment your existing campaigns. Now, I know that Wild West scenarios are a niche within a niche, but we're big fans of Deadlands and Boot Hill, so...
Right.
Not to mention a couple of others.
Yeah, so before we tear into it, I just want to talk about issue 71. This was reviewed Ian World, and that's what kind of sparked my interest in talking about this. There's some great stuff in here. A lot of Greyhawk content for you Greyhawkers or Greyhawkers, whatever you call yourselves these days. They've got four unusual characters, Heward, Kiatom, Merlin and all that. And Merlin, of course, is the character that has the guns. The gunslinger. And there's also a number of new Greyhawk deities, including some rather nasty ones. So We'll just leave it there. And a story by,
I believe, Wastri the Hopping Prophet.
Yeah.
Made his appearance here.
Ethrinol.
Yeah.
He's a terrible deity. As well as some reviews of the good stuff, Swordbearer and Dungeon computer game. And anyway, not to be confused 19... with Dungeon, but it was Dungeon, spelled with a Z, just so you figure it out. So yeah, there's some good stuff here, as well as official new Druid spells. So this was pre-Unearthed Arcana. And but the Blink of a Wizard's Eye by one of our favorite authors, or at least one of the ones, the author of The Sleeping Dragon, Joel Rosenberg.
Yeah. Did,
Blink of a Wizard's Eye. Pretty good stuff. Illustrations by Steve Chappelle. Kind of liked it. But yeah, fiction by Joel Rosenberg. So anyway, that's just the backdrop. What we're really here for is the Taming of Brimstone. So without further ado, let's get into it. So yeah, well, this came out... it wasn't very popular. Some people actually like, well, we buy Drag Magazine. Why are we buying Drag Magazine for Boot Hill? This is in the after comments of and letters to the editor afterwards. And it's like, okay.
Because things have not really changed much in all of these years, is that, you know, the gamers do not, as a rule, live in a place with no opinions. Like they have opinions and they feel very free sharing them. And one of the more toxic elements back then is that people did not share space well, which was, it was,
oh really?
You know,
I would have never guessed.
Yeah. It was D&D or nothing. You know, it's like my niche of the niche is this uber niche and everybody else needs to get out of it.
Yeah, they had top secret modules. They had Boot Hill Adventures.
The reality was that Dragon was always an in-house organ for like the actual TSR at the time, mm-hmm. and they supported all of their products through that while referencing, reviewing, and making room like for the games everybody else.
The magazines like White Dwarf featured a more diverse cast of games because, well, Games Workshop wasn't really producing many of them.
Yeah, it was not a games producer, but it was part of the gaming marketplace.
Yeah, they were a distributor of D&D in the United Kingdom and into Europe by default. By a nice little trip over to America to Gen Con, to, hey, we're British and we want to distribute your game. Also, a little bit of the fact that they were very, we talked about the British breakfast, and yes, we're not mentioning the culinary skills of British people, we're just talking about the basics here of RuneQuest Traveler.
The excellent product coming out of
America that they really fastened onto. So, yeah, D&D was one of them as well. So, anyway, when we talk about sharing space and not doing it so well, this was one that got some controversy, and there was not much Boot Hill content in Dragon Magazine to be had very often.
No, it was quite rare. So, for us, this was a treasure. This was
like a free module.
Yeah, I bought the magazine that I was going to get anyway, and I got free Boot Hill supplement with like campaign play value. This was not like here's like 3 pages minimalist module and a map. Oh no, it's a bit more comprehensive than that.
Right. This is a really this is by Donald Muma. I don't know. If I'm pronouncing the last name.
Mama?
All right. M-U-M-M-A. Hopefully I got it somewhat right between the two of us. I think we did.
Yeah.
So they wrote this. Not really familiar with Donald, but he definitely did a fine job. This is a very comprehensive adventure. This is where Dragon Magazine showed a lot of its, the editorialship and direction of providing you with all the information you need to run this adventure. And yeah, this really gives it to you in spades. And Boot Hill is not really a robust gaming system. There's not a whole lot. So,
oh, it was stripped down minimalism.
Right.
So very much. Remember that Boot Hill did not come out in 1983. This wasn't like some like mm-hmm. tiny piece of product support for something that just came out. This was at long last a adventure for a system that had been around and was one of TSR's early products. And the core concept in Boot Hill was like the brutality and sudden violence of the Old West. The fatality rate for Boot Hill play in general was pretty high, which I suppose was like to some that is a deficit. But, there were gamers who were like, geez, how come my characters in Boot Hill keep going around dying all the time? Because this is not like there's no magic. There's no plate mail. The means to insure yourself against harm don't exist. So if you're going to choose conflict over resolution, you'd better be very realistic about how you approach it.
Right, Andy. The stats are SAR, which stands for single action revolver, rifle, which is R equals rifle, and then BAC, base gun accuracy. And then your stats are strength, which is a numerical rating between 1 and 20, or 0 and 20, 0 being dead.
Yeah.
And 20 being like, you are a giant of muscle and sinew.
Yeah, this is the, after my, childhood traveling as part of a circus and lifting freakishly heavy objects for money, I have taken to the road and now become an adventurer.
Which is also your hit points.
Yeah.
And so when weapons do 4d6, yeah, you tend to be a little wary. That's my hit points, is my strength? Yep.
Yeah.
That's it. And then the other skill is bravery.
Yeah.
Bravery rating, which determines if your character will chicken out in a gunfight or fail after being wounded to stick around.
And bravery is a percentage. Yep, percentage.
And then base speed and stat, which is it's basically your character is like your reflexes. And now,
as we explained Boot Hill here, now I want people to reflect on what isn't present because it always amuses the heck out of me when I think about what's not present. Intelligence, wisdom, charisma.
Honest, wisdom is really only in D&D.
It's just strength and guts.
Yeah, it's strength and guts. That's it. That's what you require, the grit and determination to survive in the Wild West.
Yeah.
Frills. As historical, it's an attempt, the original Boot Hill was just an attempt to present a war game that gave you very small scale encounters that you could game out on tabletop. But
yeah, let's recreate the OK Corral. It's mm-hmm.
Or robbing a bank or ambushing a train and how you would fight this off. Or
yeah, the classic scenarios that were so popular in movies that literally only predated the creation of this game by like 20 years to 10 years, My Darling Clementine goes back much further to the black and white era, but Western movies were very, very popular at the time. Mm-hmm. So these were scenarios that were culturally relevant to the people developing games in the 1970s. And so when TSR eventually was able to branch out and start creating a wider variety of games, Boot Hill is one of the things that came along, and it was designed to recreate those scenarios. So, to some people, it lacked role play potential. It doesn't have to.
Yeah, they kind of more with the second edition of the rules, which the initial box set that me and Mike had was more presented as you can role play. I guess you could also role play Dawn Patrol too, but they never went that way with it. Dawn Patrol presented itself like you would actually play a campaign where you created a pilot with the stats, got assigned a plane, and then went out and tried to survive. And so,
yeah. Welcome to 1916. What? What's the percentage of deaths for pilots?
Pretty high.
Holy crap. Yeah. Knights of the Sky, my butt.
It's more like a slaughterhouse in the sky.
Oh, man.
Holy cow.
Abattoir of air. Wow.
All right. Yeah, but you could have role played. You could have done
Yeah.
It's named after the movie, The Dawn Patrol. And if you look at it from that point of view, yeah, where they go from being young, idealistic pilots who hated their superior because he sent them always into the most dangerous situations to now they're the commanders and flight leaders who have to tell men to go into the air and die.
Yeah.
That evolution of...
Some of you will not return, but that is the sacrifice I am willing
to make. All right, they weren't that...
Nobody likes to wear those shoes, except complete jerks. So, you know, there are some people who are very comfortable
in that position. Yeah, it's for the greater cause.
Most of us, like, have an instinctive...
So, steering it back, we wanted to make that little comparison why it's so sparse. Is because, well, Boot Hill, they just basically said, let's turn it into a role-playing game. So there's some rules for gambling, and there are rules for interactions. But they're based on your bravery. And mostly it's buffaloing people and bullying them.
Yeah, trying to stay out of a gunfight and yet still getting what you want. They put some other avenues, you know, but most of it lands in the hands of the player. If you're not convincing to the DM, there just isn't much in the way of dice to fall back on.
So yeah, so you're either being bushwhacked, which is the surprise, or you're... having a drawdown at high noon. Them's the rules. So either you're being surprised, which means you're having a significant life-changing event, or you and some other nut job are deciding to be hard asses in the middle of the street at high noon, willing to commit mutual suicide if need be. So that's the Boot Hill game. There is Western Hero. There is GURPS Western. There is, of course, we've spoken Deadlands many times. There's even a Call of Cthulhu Weird West or Strange West supplement. So there are many different ways to play out a Wild West scenario. Whatever one you choose, even if you choose not to use Boot Hill or go with Boot Hill, I mean, you can find the rules that are available. I would suggest if you went with Boot Hill, go with the 4th edition. It's a little bit more robust and provides some strength. Well, it gives conversions to older stuff like that. Nonetheless, let's get into the meat of the game. So the premise on this is that this is a town taming adventure. So lawmen and native types need not apply because this is out of your bailiwick. Because lawmen would just come in and basically start arresting people or shooting them.
Yeah, this is the gray, neutral borderland of... town taming. This is not the like the actual lawmen aren't here to do this. That's the problem. Nobody wants to wear that hat.
It's
or this territory or area is effectively lawless. Owed to
There's been a silver strike in the mountains of brimstone, and it takes place in northern Arizona.
Yeah, a lot of people show up very suddenly. A lot of people seeking fortune, a lot of people seeking to take fortunes away from other people. You wind up with a lot of parasitic relationships at a moment like that. And Brimstone is no exception. It is filled to the brim with interesting NPCs. And this is where this module stands apart as particularly excellent, is that the NPCs are some of the most fleshed out backstories and connections and interests.
Yeah, for a game with such sparse...
Yeah, the impression that people have that this was not a game for role-playing is absolutely contradicted by the incredible detail provided in this module, because it literally acknowledges that the players will have to interact non-fatally with a large number of people.
Oh, but don't worry. There will be fatal
encounters. Oh, the violence is coming, though.
Yeah, so they provide that basically Brimstone was a small town sprang up in the scrublands of northern Arizona, anticipation of a railroad route that would be passing through. So some merchants and business folk had come in, obviously, to capitalize on the number of rail workers, as well as the possibility of starting a town at a railhead, establishing a railhead here. And then there was a silver strike. And already, Brimstone, just a very small collection of a few buildings and houses, begin to spring up overnight and become populated with prospectors and those who prey upon prospectors, claim jumpers, bushwhackers, and all of the malcontents, as well as the ne'er-do-wells of cowboys and transient population of drifters, vagabonds, and assassins.
Yeah, old Stinky Pete the prospector got his hands on a large pile of silver and was coming back to town, and like people found his body being eaten by vultures because somebody bushwhacked him on the way. And oh, what a surprise. The Dirthead brothers show up in town with silver nuggets galore, and they seem to be spending it freely. I wonder what could have happened to old Stinky Pete.
And so overrun with outlaws and money, hungry cowboys and others that are willing to take the spoils from those who worked hard for it, the town sheriff that they elected quickly among their number was gunned down, and no one wants to take the job now. So the citizens committee is formed, tried in vain to find a successor as they're being overrun by all these transients. And so the railroad decides not to move the railroad track away from this terrible place that Brimstone has become.
Yeah, this place is so crime riddled that we can't even, like, the railroad doesn't want to move here.
And it's the only town within 30 miles. So the railroad is at a loggerheads with this, as well as the town committee, which is a number of few people who, well, are somewhat dubious and sometimes adversarial to each other, have come together to try to offer a job. And so this takes us place to when we talked about Unforgiven, we talked about Little Bill, and he's based off of real life character Bill Tillman. Now, of course, nobody called Little Bill or Bill Tillman Little Bill to his face, but many people did behind his back. So he was a name that was given to him. The reason why he didn't call Bill Tillman Little Bill to his face is because that's, you want to start a fight? Do you like getting beat up? But also, while Bill,
it'll still be better than being shot, but you know, like one way or another, this is going to hurt. So.
And it's pretty much comparable to what Wild Bill Hickok did. Basically, he was a town tamer as well. He nominally elected the sheriff. Basically, he was such a dangerous and ferocious gunman that people feared him and nobody wanted to mess with him. And that's what your characters are going to be thrust into the roles of. So we've set the stage. This is what it is. Let's talk about how you would interact with this as a DM. They give you right off the bat all the types that you'll be working with, from townsfolk to outlaws. And in between, you're going to have things like homesteaders, because there's going to be a lot of people trying to make a claim here as well.
Base average stat ratings are provided, okay? The category of people that you are dealing with has like base average stats for each of those types of people, whether it's townsfolks or cowboys, miners, loggers, the track layers, homesteaders, and what have you. The point is that they have set it up so that you can very quickly, like, you got three miners who just came down out of the hills, and voila, here's their stats.
Boom. Yeah, they got a handful of silver among them, and they're here to spend their money and blow off some steam.
Then you've got the random crime frequency.
Yeah, table. Let's talk about that. So it's a chart, from a percentile chart from 1 to 100. We see what Brimstone is, why it's such a problem, because murder is literally the highest tracking.
Yeah, 25 for, well, all right, disturbing the peace and murder are the two largest.
Yeah, two largest.
At the opposite ends of the spectrum. It's a crime, the most common crimes are either very minor or the most serious of all.
Yeah, and of murder, there's attempted murder, manslaughter, robbery, and assault.
Arson, too.
Well, arson is...
Arson's very tiny.
Yeah, it's like 4%.
Yeah, there's 4 or 5% chance of arson being committed.
56 through 60, so that's 4%.
And 10% chances of attempted murder versus 25% chance of murder, which means that, hey, at least they may be murderers, but they tried. They showed up. They aimed to finish the job. Like, yeah, if it starts, they're there to finish it. So I kind of respect that.
So there's also
That's what the players are there to stop. And the frequency and rates are covered so that, the players are perpetually having new and random challenges thrown at them. They don't know when, where, or why things will happen. It's not like a preset automatic course. The environment and background has been set up in advance with the expectations being placed upon them. There's an impact that their law-like efforts will have on the community for the better. And that part is guaranteed. But you don't know precisely which threats will present themselves when or where, and they may distract you from some of the main villains that will come along momentarily.
Yeah, and this also steps up that you will take actions as you play this out, that the town will become more tamed the more encounters you have with some of the more aggressive NPCs here. And so there's step modifiers. So this is the step one, and it goes all the way to step seven, which there's a plus 30 modifier to the dice, which means most of the time you're just going to be encountering disturbing the peace. And also arson will be completely cut out after a period of time as well. But we'll get into that in just a second. We're just going to talk about another thing here. There's cleverly one, there's 10 buildings. So that means that from 0 to 1 on the die, or 9 on the dice, you roll and see where the crime location happens. So as a DM, you have to, a game master running this, you have to be prepared up ahead of time, and you have to know all these buildings, the NPCs, and some of the perpetrators of these crimes.
Yeah.
So that requires a lot of prep work. So this is a very tough module to run cold. Just a brief skim over isn't going to get you prepared for it.
Yeah, the area map for the town of Brimstone shows the position of the buildings, and then micro examinations of the buildings are provided. So, like, the mapping is there, and it is solid. Yeah, again, this labeled... was amazingly comprehensive for a little module in...
as an insert. So, yes, from 0 to 9, and, of course, the other building, there's, you might notice some smart among you, there's a 11th building, but that's the barber shop. Doctor's office, which is operated by Doc Scott.
And neutral ground Highlander.
Yeah, so it's kind of an unwritten, unspoken rule that no one messes with a person who is very hard, whose skills are sorely needed and very hard to replace.
Yeah, there are not a lot of doctors in the area. And, you know, that means that this is the only person that can patch you back together and give you a fighting chance at survival in a particularly brutal game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the crimes do not happen there. That's the one spot that is, like, holy ground.
So to help you out with this, once you determine there's going to be a crime, you roll a percentile dice. I would suggest keeping these no matter what system you're rolling. It either is going to be a special NPC, 1 through 70, or a 71 through 00, just your typical bandit outlaw, and then you just preform whatever you want to have happen. It could be just a simple heist job. It could be an assault, whatever the crime is.
But yeah, that gives you a 70% chance of encountering one of the special NPCs that are criminals in the area that are your specific challenges to deal with. And as you whittle away at them one by one, that brings the town closer to having been tamed and thereby keeping the opportunity to have a railhead installed and pleasing the citizens' committee. So your goal is within your reach, and the dice are placing it fairly close.
Yeah, so not even you as the game master are going to know when this is going to occur. It's just going to occur at a time.
Yeah.
They have a victim table, which either is going to be a typical NPC character from the chart above, or a special NPC in the town, or an owner or proprietor or crime location. Then you roll again. And then they go through the steps of taming the town. It's accomplished in steps. Step one, when you first come on the scene, perhaps you can start with two of one of your characters is experienced 10 or higher. Which means basically
it's law and order, special NPC unit.
Yep, special NPC unit. So you don't always have to kill anybody. If there are a period of 4 days of elapsed without any player characters being killed or forced to leave town or assaults,
dun, dun.
Non-player characters, specifically typical, has not been committed have crime upon since the start of the adventure. They raise the threshold. You go to step three, which then gives you a more beneficial modifier as you start to clean up the town. But there are some characters that we need to talk about, and I think we're going to have to go into extra news on that. So Yeah. We'll just talk about a little bit more about the maps down here. You can easily print it out. You could remove the insert. It was pretty much made so you could just pluck the staples out and pull this insert because it was right in the center of the magazine to have the map on the table. And when we talk about special NPCs in here, of course, there's the player characters that are mentioned as potential targets for crimes as well. But one of the characters is in here that we talk about quite a bit is Shotgun Slay. And yeah, he's just a dirty, low-down snake using two sawed-off shotguns, one holstered on each hip, and two bandoliers with 25 shells. He needs two hands to aim and fire each gun, so he cannot use both of them.
But it guarantees that he has a backup ready to pull off another large-scale scattergun attack.
He'll pull the trigger on one and fire a big shot, scatter shot across an area, and then draw the other one and fire again. But
now, in his defense, his bravery is 96%. Okay, he is absolutely committed to process. But the type of weaponry that he uses is notorious. He is a true bad guy's bad guy. He is down, dirty, bad to the bone, and unapologetic about it. So expect treachery and viciousness from this total piece of crap.
Yeah, he's the most feared villain in the setting, probably the first one. And so when confronted by the player characters, told him that he has to clear out of town, well, he'll get on his horse and ride off into the night, vowing never to return to Brimstone again, because he will avoid a shootout with any town tamers, if at all possible.
Well, yeah, because a more accurate long-range weapon is his worst nightmare. You know, like somebody wants to do a shootout in the middle of town, like, you know, two, you know, hard noses, that is not a scenario that he is going to come out well in, because the accuracy and damage value of his weapon is eroded by standing, like, you know, 25 feet apart. So, yeah, what he wants is creep up, bushwhack, boom!
Yeah, he will, if a confrontation does turn to violence, he'll just get out of town and vow never to return. But that's a darn lie, because he'll come right back with a gang.
Yeah.
He comes back with four no goods, and they all have different stats and skills and stuff. Some of them, their bravery is not is quite as high as his, with one of their bravery, Sam Jones, being 07. He's crying. Oh, I don't want to die. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's villain number one, and we'll hit the rest of our special.
All right, we're back. We just missed the cutoff point there. So, yeah, we were going to come back, but here we are. So we'll just get right back into it. We're talking about Shotgun Slay, and this is our second part, extra innings of bonus content, as we like to say.
Yeah, a little bonus content. We're going over the limit today, but it's totally worth it.
We're talking about what I love about Shotgun Slay is they give you some if Slay is beaten up by the town tamers or has his weapons confiscated, he will get on his horse and ride out of town shouting, "I'll never set foot in Brimstone again," which is, like I said, is a damn lie. And he has a gang of a bunch of people that come with him. But Slay's boys are cold-blooded killers, although I do doubt anybody with a bravery rating of 07 is a cold-blooded killer. But I would say more of a sadistic opportunist.
Thank you. Yeah, that's much more the situation here, is that it's not... their bravery rating is not relevant to their criminal intent in this case. It just determines how soon before one of them flinches and runs away. You know, one of them is especially cowardly with like a mere 7% bravery rating. They will be easily cowed if the boss is killed. And that's the point. That the real threat here is the, you know, reputation surrounding the bad guy. That pulls others to them and gets the rest of them to feel that, like, okay, we're gonna stick with this, we're gonna run with this, we're gonna do some crimes, man. You take Shotgun Slay out of the mix, and voila, the actual scenario. I mean, he's literally a, you know, campaign scenario moment where
he's the big bad, the evil guy.
They killed Shotgun Slay. Well, they really are cleaning up Brimstone. That's a transitional moment that the DM should pay attention to. There are a lot of other well-fleshed out
NPCs. Yeah, we're going to cover the other part of this, which brings it up. Yeah, so here is one basic encounter that you're going to have no matter what. You're going to have to confront at some point Shotgun Slate. You might fight Mike McAllister. He's the pyromaniac. If you get rid of this guy, it removes. He's just a drifter in the town, and he loves to burn buildings down. So if the result arson is obtained, it is more than likely that this Mike McAllister is the culprit. So this requires you to do some detective work to track him down.
Again, you're like proving that there is more going on under the surface of Boot Hill than people initially thought. You know, the players are intended to be put in situations where you're going to have to think, you're going to have to ask questions, and not everything can be solved with, you know, like, both barrels blazing.
Yeah, and if you roll arson again, 50% chance means the crime is an assault instead of arson if you imprison or get rid of Mike McAllister.
Yeah, the odds of arson goes to 2.5%.
Yeah, so it still happens, and more than likely it's just a secondary event. But there's also another character here, Sean McTosh. And so the rail workers have a ringleader here who basically runs the tent saloon, or from the tent saloon runs court here. And so he has a bunch of bully boys coming to town. And every time they're off work, every 3 days or so, he brings him and his crew in. And now they're not necessarily, there's about 20 of them. They're not necessarily murderers.
Yeah, they're not characterized as especially unreasonable or particularly criminal. It just means that this is a crowd of people who become intoxicated, spend their money, and periodically are either A, the victims of, or the perpetrators of minor crimes.
Most likely just punching in the face,
yeah,
getting
just
rowdy,
disturbing the peace, assaults, things like that. This is not a murder squad, but that puts the players in the awkward position of, well, okay, look, Shotgun Slay's gang are brutal murderers who plan to bushwhack and slaughter anybody in their path. These are guys who just get in fights in the middle of town and, like, he punched my mule! You know, just,
you're lucky that's all he punched.
These people can be reasoned with.
And right, you have to strike a bargain with them because they're important. So you can't just run them all the town. And if you keep them out, then the whole purpose of Brimstone being here fades away. So you have to strike an accord with them. Now, if a deal is struck, the thing is that it improves the situation because Sean will keep his railroad workers under control.
Yeah.
He'll respect
a
deal.
He's got a couple of his bully boys, you know, he's got his lieutenants, so to speak. And he'll police his own for you, which again moves the town one notch closer.
And so you're going to have to negotiate it, maybe reduce drinking prices or a special area for them to cool off after having one too many. And whatever you end up making a deal with, you can imprison him or even kill him, and then it worsens everything because now there's bad blood.
Well, and again, this is a person who has such influence over that particular group that with them gone, the situation deteriorates. There is nobody holding it together. So, yeah, some thought on the player's part is totally called for.
So, again, you have to negotiate. And then there's a couple other malcontents. Billy Gaston basically fancies himself as a knife thrower and some kind of badass and loves to pull the self-defense card after provoking other NPCs in the confrontations. So he has to be dealt with. Pretty much you can just beat the crap out of him or throw him in jail for a few days and teach him what for.
The point being that this does not have to end in fatality, but it can make an excellent example of, like, no, absolutely not. This is not the place for that anymore. This, you know, Brimstone is running clean. And if you act like that, you wind up in the hoosegow.
Yeah, and so he's also backed up by another NPC, Sam Lyons, who will also try to, in self-defense, well, I was just defending my friend, will try to draw down on the town tamers. And then there's another guy who wants to get a job as a guard at the bank in order to perpetrate a bank robbery. So that's a situation brewing in there. And the other one is there is basically a serial murderer here. He just lives to stab people. He just enjoys stabbing somebody. He will probably end up getting one of the rail workers in one of the time. And then if he doesn't succeed, he will obviously be able to be identified. And then you have to go track him down. So that's one of the two. It's either there's going to be a murder and then you have to find out who's responsible. So that's an investigatory response on the part of the town teamers. Or he'll be identified and then fleeing. And then you got to go out in the wilds and track his ass down and bring him to justice. And of course, there's a couple other fugitives here. There's one guy that's holed up who has a price on his head in New Mexico. And he's hiding out in the carpenter shop. In the back, and then leaves during the day and then goes to Kate.
It's worth mentioning details, of course, can be changed so that DMs can avoid spoilers.
Yep.
People who know this material, that again calls for the DM to exercise a little caution in replacing things in a way that will throw them off. I immediately go to the back of the saloon and in the spittoon that has the dent on the left-hand corner.
Right.
There's a loose floorboard directly underneath it, which you find nothing.
It's nothing. Gone. But yeah, so he's in the back. And the thing is he's an outlaw, but he's cooling his heels here. He's healing up after an encounter. So he's not here to start a fight with you. As a matter of fact, he's going to do his best to stay out of trouble. But if you do find him, and that's just basically observing him as he mills around, and you capture him, it does establish that Brimstone's not a place for ne'er-do-wells, drifters, or assassins.
Well, yeah, don't come here to hide from your crime, because
you're going to get caught.
Yeah, people are going to pay attention to that stuff now.
And then there's just a general pickpocket, gambling sharp, a couple others here. But most of the people here... that you have in the town itself. It gives a great deal of interest, detail to the areas in there that we talked about, the barber shop, doctor's office.
The carpenters. It's doing a thriving business in coffins lately.
And then there's
McCurdy's Saloon.
Yeah, now I don't have this on true authority, but anybody who's familiar with... the Knights of the Dinner Table and the Cattlepunk version of Hackmaster that B.A. runs. He has a character, Red Gertie Pickens, that shows up. Now, I'm not trying to say that this is just speculation on my part. I don't have any proof to back this up. But I'm pretty sure that Jolly Blackburn may have been inspired by this particular NPC.
Yeah, because he was reading Ragged Magazine around the time we were. I mean,
yeah,
and just a few years after that, he was working for Shadus. So,
he started his own magazine. But yeah, Gil McCurdy is the leader of the Brimstone Citizen Committee in the saloon, and he's a pretty he appears to be a loudmouth and a braggart. But basically, he has little manners than the people who inhabit his saloon, and he seems to just be one of the normal denizens. But that's a ruse because he's actually hiding in plain sight. He's the leader of the Citizens Committee because that's what some of the outlaws are looking for. So who are the members of the Citizens Committee? Yeah, well, they meet clandestinely and they talk amongst themselves. So they know who they are and they know who everyone else. And also McGurdy's saloon serves as the unofficial bank, which is very dangerous in Brimstone to be. So he keeps a lot of money in a very close vicinity. So it's pretty much known that, if you want to get rich quick, and that's being one of his guards, and that's where one of the characters comes in. That is a kind of a potboiler element in this whole scenario.
More than one person is aiming for that little fortune.
Yeah, they think, well, if I can be one of the guards, that'll get me closer to the money, and I can just, maybe off somebody. So McGurdy is pretty canny. He keeps two of them at a time. So they have to both watch each other. So yeah, he's not really a super badass. That's actually somebody else, and the real hero of this place.
I'm the one who's supposed to kill the bus driver.
Yeah. The real character here is Kate's place. Now, of course, you would think, oh, Kate's place. Well, that's a cat house. Well, no, because the only woman member of the Brimstone Citizens Committee is Kate James, and she's homely and very gruff and hates customers cheating at her gambling tables even more than she dislikes having a fight break out at the bar, which she doesn't like. But to help back her up is Mr. John. He has a strength of 19 and a bravery rating of 90% and also keeps a shotgun.
Yeah.
Under the counter. And he prefers not to use the shotgun except to beat you with it.
Yeah, this is a guy that...
Mr. John.
Yeah, his intimidation factor is zero here. Yeah, like he's not impressed. Mr. John is not impressed. Should be the meme for all of this.
Yep.
Simon and General Store.
Yeah, there's a general store here, which, of course, he's kind of at loggerheads with Mr. McCurdy because he feels that McCurdy is running a scam on his bank, which it's not entirely wrong.
Welcome to the core concept of banking.
I keep my own money in a strong box. Well, that makes you the target of robberies. And so that's probably one that's going to happen right there. There's a railroad warehouse, which is kept pretty much under guard by a couple of the rail workers, but it has a caretaker. And then there's the infamous tent saloon, which is also the flop house for off-duty railroad workers.
Yeah.
Put up some money and cash. So that's one of the big things that also provides you here is if you help expand this and basically give them some credence and make them be recognized by the town council or the town Brimstone Citizens Committee, that's a way to get the railroad workers in there is to get their little tent saloon that they put up illegally or without approval from the town. Get that legitimized. That will make them your friends and at least get everybody to get along well enough together to start taming Brimstone. So, yeah, we've walked over this pretty well. There's some other stuff in here, too, that you can find. I do like the little details about all the guards, and several people have their own agendas in here. So that requires the Game Master to be able to be agile and keep on his toes for presenting the right amount of tension in this.
Now, this is a huge leap forward in terms of, like, gameplay for a game that people thought of as simple shoot 'em up. Like, you know, in its... first inception, it's let's recreate the OK Corral or, you know, famous train robbery. By the time this came out in 1983, somebody had shown how much more Boot Hill can be. And all of that, every last stitch of that material has some, you know, like transfer value to other Western style gameplay games, you know, or honestly, like if you change the setting and the implements and all of that, any role-playing game. This is a great lesson in how to create a scenario that is comprehensive, has a wide variety of people with differing interests, and has a larger goal, like moving the crime activity level knob up or down, depending on their actions and how they've worked with these factions of citizens. And the impression they have made upon people, there's some value there for players to remember because, you know, gaming, I mean, it does not have to be as monochromatic a task as some have painted it.
Right, and this is not a linear adventure because the random element of determining who's going to be the crime, who is the perpetrator of the crime, who is the victim, and the location makes it random. So even the Game Master is not completely aware, which we mean, means that the Game Master has to be completely cognizant of all the pieces at play in here. So this makes it a very complex game to run, but a very satisfying one, especially when you look at other games recently like Red Dead Redemption. Yeah, I said it too. It recently came out.
Yeah.
And I like that game because, you know, you just basically put the guns to the railroad baron on that one. Yeah, I like that. but that aside, I also like the fact that, yes, you can spend 2 hours petting a dog. That's an achievement.
Aww. I still have not yet achieved in Baldur's Gate 3, like, that's what you have two hands for, which is getting to pet the little owlbear and your dog at the same time. I have not had that happen yet. But I will.
There you go.
It's happening.
Do you have to do 2 hours all at once? No, it can be over a period of time. Just spend 2 hours petting your dog.
Aw.
30 seconds. That's up.
I like that the dog and the owlbear are getting along.
Yeah.
They're buddies.
For now.
Yeah, well, you know. Hey, just make sure you feed the owlbear.
And use the rolled up newspaper once in a while. don't use anything more than a rolled up newspaper. It will end up badly. It won't respect you. It'll fear you. And if it fears you, that means it will hate you.
It is only waiting.
Back. Getting back to the game. Back.
Yeah. All right. Bringing this to a close, the majesty of this is that, as Randy mentioned, this is one of those things that the non-linear nature of gameplay, the random element, is one of the key things here. It means that no playthrough will go exactly the same. Much like a game of Clue, all of the primary characters are in place, but you don't know the who's, the when's, the what's, the where's, the why's. You know, you have to unravel this through gameplay as the dice spell it out for you.
Initially, you're going to have a lot of crimes going on all at the same time, and you're going to have a lot of fires to piss out. Nonetheless, it will be a challenge for the players to figure out how to manage their time, which means, yes, splitting up the party occasionally, but also investigating things, as well as being able to accurately and predictably assign threat levels to, shotgun slay initially is going to be your major combatant, but also the outlaw that's just cooling his heels in here can be a wild card that enters in when he's the victim of an assault.
He doesn't
want to be. He just wants to, I'm healing up my wounds. I'm just hiding out in here. This is a good place to. And then he gets attacked. And then, you recognize who he is.
Yeah. Or, heaven forbid, one of the primary, town members winds up, one of the major stores, somebody winds up being the victim of a murder in them.
Yeah.
And it indicates that it's a prime NPC. That alters gameplay once again.
That's
somebody that could have been a greater complication or a greater asset, and they're gone. And you just let it happen. Ride it out. But there are lessons in there for how to build, small town scenarios with incredible potboiler potential. It's the reason we picked Taming a Brimstone for this, because this is a walkthrough lesson in town building, in adventure building, that has more playable value per, printed word than average. This is how it's done.
Yeah, this is one of the highlights why Dragon Magazine was so highly prized. This is good writing. This is good adventure design, and it's good gameplay. And to find all three at once is a rare treasure in and of itself. I would suggest that when you play this, starting the game with Fleetwood Mac's Rumors album, The Chain. Not because it has anything to do with the song's content, but just the somber tone of how it starts off with that lonely guitar at first, and then builds up to this crescendo. And that's exactly how this game should run. Also, I suggest Molly Hatchet's Flirting with Disaster, and if I had any band to assign to Boot Hill, it would actually be Molly Hatchet.
See, I would throw in Silver by the Pixies.
Well, yeah, that's you.
Just because it's got a haunting desert kind of tone.
Yes, it does. Right, and you're the Lou Reed, David Bowie.
I am Rush, in that zone.
Threeman. Our three favorite bands. Mine's Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, and Pink Floyd. Yours is.
Yeah, Lou Reed, David Bowie, and Rush. But I need people to know the Pixies and the Pogues are lurking in the background.
Yeah.
So if one of those first three slips, it might not make it. And
you have some adjacents.
Things could happen.
They're still favorite bands. Yes, Celtic Frost and Gojira are also loom large in mine. And occasionally, even just like I was talking with Scott with Fate's Warning and Bastard Sword. Yeah, look up that band, Bastard Sword. You had me at Bastard Sword, but wow, Doom stoner metal.
All yeah, right. it wounds me to, like, you know, not include, like, Johnny Cash in that top
three. Oh,
because very influential.
In sir, you, Marty Robbins,
the Beatles.
Can be put in here. But anyway, with the musical discord aside, Molly Hatchet's Flirting with Disastrous, the theme song for Shotgun Slate. Play it.
Oh, see, that's highly appropriate. Was and that album cover, by the way.
Oh, that, yeah, Frazetta.
Yeah, that was Frazetta's. It was also the cover of Carl Wagner's novel.
Yeah, Bloodstone, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
But, yeah, classic material. We highly recommend it, and that is where we're going to land this dirigible.
This train wreck.
We're bringing the burning wreckage of, like, the... Yeah, that's right. We're the Hindenburg of gaming. Yeah. It went over like a Led Zeppelin. There, got that out.
Yeah, you
see?
Did.
You wonder where that was back in the beginning?
Yeah.
I brought it.
Yeah, but this is a really great game. The reason why I have no shame about going in extra innings is this is a rare scenario, and it is something that is not only inspirational for how scenarios like this can be done, but it also really brings up some dramatic moments that just happen at the table, just a random roll of dice, you know, that magic we talk about. That, you know, just sometimes the dice, the choices, the characters, everything just comes together to create that moment. And we say moment, the moment.
And this has the potential for that, unlike
a scripted event where, okay, you do this and this happens.
Yeah, the more narrow, linear, and scripted it is, a little of that magic gets lost at every step along the way.
And this has enough of that random and scripted.
Yeah, it's got all the right stuff. Yeah, I gush a little.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
of course,
look, man, it's not perfect. The Boot Hill system had its flaws in the era. And, you know, like, the brutality of the game meant that, you know, you may be rolling an extra character or two. But as you move into systems like Deadlands...
what do you mean double barrel shotguns do 4d6 at point blank range?
Yeah.
I didn't stutter.
But I only have a 14 strength, and that's considered high. Yeah, well, then you might want to take cover, because shotguns suck.
Double barrel shot off shotguns. Yeah. But, yeah... we talked about it because that guy is just, he's super annoying, and he's really deadly.
Yeah, that's the point, is that, like, in that adventure, that is one of the deadliest characters around. It's meant to be the linchpin challenge. Like, how do you get your way out of this with your characters still alive? One of your player characters may not make it through this. Possibly two.
Or a whole bunch if he gets you in the right area.
Yeah, I mean,
you're walking, two of you decide to split up the party and walk and patrol in the streets at night, and
bam!
He's hiding out with his posse, and then, he just lets you have it from a corner of a building.
Yeah.
That's what mean low-down snake he is. But not we wanted to bring it up also that since Unforgiven is one of our favorite movies, that, I had to bring up Bill Tillman, or Little Bill.
Yeah.
It's not the same person. It's just, it's supposed to be. But everybody used to call that guy Bill Tillman Little, because he was like 5'8" and not the biggest guy in the world. But man.
But super dangerous. it's the amount of fight in the dog.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
And that dog had a lot of fight in it. Now, we'll probably be seeing you guys next week.
Yeah.
If I got a little bit of luck. We're looking forward to this next topic too, because... Again, this is one where you're gonna see a lot of passion, because it's the essence of gamers themselves. You know, it's something that it's just a facet of our reality, and we can't wait to talk about it.
A pit full of bone snappers.
Kudo! Still guilty as charged.
All right, so that'll do it in for us, and we'll pack it in. So we'll see you folks later. So remember, may the dice always roll in your favor.
We're out.
See ya.